Good day, listeners. Jonathan Darty here with another edition of the Pure Sex Radio program. You know, we're a listener-supported outreach of Be Broken Ministries, and we exist to help individuals and families move from sexual brokenness to wholeness in Christ and equip others to do the same. I just want to let you know that some parts of today's episode contain elements that are sensitive and might even be triggering for some listeners, especially married couples who are on the front end of recovery, so I just encourage you to listen with care. In this episode, I welcome back Dan Drake, and I introduce Janice Cottle. Both are experts in therapeutic disclosure for marriages affected by sexual betrayal. We dive into the importance of truth in healing relationships, discussing how disclosure helps to rebuild trust. In our conversation, Dan and Janice walk us through the disclosure process, emphasizing the impact of betrayal, readiness for disclosure, tailored approaches, the so-called choreography of disclosure, and the post-disclosure phase that highlights potential obstacles when rebuilding trust. To get access to Dan and Janice's resources, visit KintsugiRecoveryPartners.com. That's KintsugiRecoveryPartners.com. recoverypartners.com. For more resources, visit bebroken.org or check out all the links that we're going to put in today's show notes. And of course, friends, we love it if you would rate and review the podcast after listening to help others find it. Now let's dive into today's discussion on disclosure. Well, all right, Dan Drake and Janice Cottle, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, you know, Dan, it's welcome back to you because you were actually on the program about 4 years ago, and you came on to talk about therapeutic disclosure in marriages that are affected by sexual betrayal. And I'm so glad that we get to have both you and Janice on this because you guys have developed some really good resources together around this topic of disclosure. But before we get into really diving into that topic and kind of unpacking it more fully, can both of you tell us a little bit about the work that you do and how people can get connected to your resources?
Go for it, Jazz.
Okay. There is a centralized place for our resources now. Dan, I'm going to let you pronounce the name of the website and then I will spell it.
Of course. KintsugiRecoveryPartners.com.
Okay. And Kintsugi is just like the artwork, K-I-N-T-S-U-G-I, RecoveryPartners.com. And we have access to the workbooks that the his and her kind of companion workbooks we created. We have access, we'll have some coming access to some workshops that Dan and I are planning to do together for those who are preparing for disclosure. And we will have access on that website to, we also train other professionals like into how to do this. And we have a guide site on the website. So you actually can find somebody who not only uses our materials, but understands the sort of the underlying reason of why we have things in there the way we do and how that relates to like the greater healing for you both individually and for your relationship.
Yeah. Well, and so let's dive into this topic of disclosure. We, in our ministry, we come across a lot of couples that there's all kinds of ways in which sexual betrayal can enter into the relationship, whether it be an affair, introduction of pornography, all kinds of other things that can be going on there. And when a piece of that comes to light and a couple says, okay, this is terrible, this is awful, but we want to figure out if there's a way forward for our relationship, they start asking questions around, well, what do we do with what may still be unknown, or what do we do with the fullness of all this brokenness? And that's where this term disclosure comes in, right? But I want first for you both maybe to give us just a simple definition. What are we talking about when you say disclosure?
Well, in simple terms, it's a coming clean for the disclosing party, secrets. It unveils lies, distortions, as well as sexual betrayal. So there's a broader piece to this because it's not just the sexual betrayals, it's the lies that covered it up, which is a conspiracy. And for the partners, like, truth is the only path to healing. It's so disorienting for partners with the discovery, because often it confirms intuition that maybe you didn't speak on because you had nothing outside of you, you know, to verify that. And you wanted to believe in your husband. And for other women, it blows the lid off of a secret life. But everything I thought I could believe is now untrue. And I don't know what to trust, including my own thoughts, my own perception. And so for partners, it's just a starting point. Truth, like the pattern of truth, is a starting point for even figuring out, how do I heal? And how does my healing fit into the healing of the relationship?
And if I could just say, I mean, this, you know, I totally agree with what you're saying, Janice. The disclosure is a restoring of truth in a relationship. So at its most core level. And we find without that base of truth, it's kind of like, you know, rebuilding a relationship on sand. We don't know, there's no foundation. The truth builds a new foundation that the relationship can be built on solid ground. And that's kind of what our model is trying to help restore that in a way that gives each person the relationship what it needs. So that the questions, how much do we share? You know, how much of truth do we share? That varies. I mean, every couple, every partner, betrayed partner wants to know different levels of information. So there's nuances that we can give in that process and make it really tailored to each particular couple for what that restoration looks like.
Well, and I will say, in understanding the potential implications of what level of information. And then there's also what Dan and I call behavioral truth. Like, somebody can share a full history of transactions, but if they do it in a way that's really damaging, that's, you know, defensive, that doesn't like convey that they're holding their partner's heart. That's information too. And it's the information about where he may be at in his own recovery. And for us, choice, I'm sorry, I'll just say one last thing. Choice is really important. And I forgot to say that we've got workbooks on Amazon, but like the volume one, the first volume, is actually understanding this whole process and what your choices are.
Yeah, I want to talk about, also ask the question, who is disclosure, like what couple is disclosure really for? Because I get the feeling that there can be some couples that, listen, they're not in a place where disclosure would even be helpful. They're not ready for that. Like, what are maybe some of the prerequisites, if I could put it that way, to determine if and when a couple is actually ready to enter this level of truth telling, this next step of getting down to what needs to be disclosed?
Can I start with that, Janice? I'm sure you have a few things to say as well.
I was going to ask if you would start with that.
Okay, I'll start on this. I love the question, and I'll just say the readiness. You use the term, when are they ready? I want to key on that because I think it's such an important question. In some ways, the person doing the disclosing, the betraying party in this case, is never ready. I mean, when is someone ready to share the whole truth, right? There's never fully ready. Emotionally, mentally, spiritually, there's never the perfect time, the optimal time to do it. So we can't wait long enough for them typically. But for the betrayed party, and I'll defer, Janice, you can talk about the research we did in a minute. But for the betrayed person who's waiting to know, what am I dealing with? What's the foundation? I feel like I'm free falling without knowing the truth of who you are. What's the extent of the impact or the damage? I mean, we can't do it soon enough. So readiness, first of all, I mean, readiness, if someone's going to, the person who's engaged in the behaviors, the addict in this case, if they are not going to be willing to tell the whole truth, to me, that's foundational. If they're going to continue lying or deceiving or share a partial truth, we never want to build do a disclosure with someone who's saying, you know, I'll share 80%, but this last few things I can't share because they're too painful for myself. And they'll usually say it's too painful for my partner to hear, and they'll kind of say that. So I think critical is someone being willing to share the whole truth. Then the nuances come. What does the partner want it? Sometimes the person who's done the behaviors is willing to do it. And sometimes the partner says, I don't want to know. We're not ever going to force a disclosure on someone who doesn't want to know. So, I mean, finding that nuance, also how much they do want to know. But readiness comes in a lot of different ways. And that's part of the model. And this is Janice's thinking that helped me think through this. A lot of it depends on where a couple is in their healing journey. So what may, let's say we're doing a disclosure early on, you know, after discovery of a betrayal, the first few months, it's going to look different than if it's 3 years from now. What level of detail or even kind of insight that the person has over their behaviors, sobriety that builds extra clarity. They're kind of out of the fog. They may understand what was going on and all this. And so they may have more empathy and understanding of the impact too. So there's different levels based on, you know, where the couple is, what they're needing from disclosure. But yeah, again, I don't think the readiness question, I think, is a really, really good one. Mm-hmm. And yet it's a difficult one because on some level, we're never going to have the perfect optimal time.
And I will say, ideal readiness is different from readiness, and maybe even shifting the word readiness to need. One of the things I do like that Dan and I did is that we actually tested our own kind of beliefs and assumptions about disclosure. We did, you know, did some research, took it to the source. And this first piece actually comes from an APSET survey, where not only did we ask partners to sort of measure, like rank the level of pain, you know, 1 to 10 from the discovery, and the for those who had gone through a disclosure, the level of pain, 1 to 10 from the full disclosure. We also asked them to rank the pain of that long wait. You know, that sitting in, I don't know, I can't trust anything I think I know. And for the discovery itself, the emotional pain was 9.6 on a 10-point scale. The pain of the disclosure itself was 7.7, which is still a major earthquake with damages to the most buildings. But the wait time was 9.2. So sometimes when partners get more quiet, people presume that that aching need isn't there. And it really is. So you have to sort of balance off like the readiness of the person to the ideal readiness of the person disclosing versus that ongoing 9.2 pain of the wait for the partner. And then also kind of where the needs and the purpose is. Sometimes I've participated in guided disclosures that were very early in where we knew, the partner knew that he wasn't going to be able to come fully clean. But there were some extremely basic information she needed before she could focus on herself. And sometimes that's, does it involve kids? Does it involve our kids? And with those, sometimes we follow those with polygraphs or not, but that's, there are a lot of partners can't even breathe without that versus someone who, and Dan, I would say I have sometimes been a part of a disclosure where the guides knew going in, he really wasn't ready to come clean, but we went ahead with it because it's almost like the partner needed that validation of where he was at behavioral truth. Once she needed to see that and accept that's also true. He's done some good work. Maybe he's done some work around sobriety, but there's no engagement with a deep recovery. And that was important for her as well. It's almost like a cross-check of her intuition that.
Now, before we get into a little bit of the kind of nuts and bolts of what's the actual sort of content and contours and elements of a disclosure, are there different types of disclosures, or is it sort of one size fits all?
Well, we're definitely the different types. One size fits all.
Can I just say, so Janice mentioned workbooks that we created. In our process, we didn't think it would be too intensive of work together. We thought, oh, we have some resources. We can put let's make this into a pretty simple workbook. And how, I don't know how many years later, after realizing that wasn't going to work.
20 years, Dan.
20 years later. Yeah, right. We ended up with these workbooks because we realized we don't have one process. It's more, there are a bunch of choice points along the way that each couple needs to navigate uniquely for their situation. So there isn't, in our view, there isn't one type of disclosure, one size fits all, because every couple's different, as we know. So there are some major different types. I mean, there's a verbal disclosure versus a written disclosure. We tend to advocate towards a written disclosure just because it usually is more thorough. It may take some more time, but it's usually more thorough. And there's different types even there. Is it kind of more bullet pointed, categorized, like a timeline format? Is it more narrative based? So there's not one way. We try to give choices and say generally what we recommend. But we try to guide through the different options as opposed to saying this is the way to do it, because I don't know, everybody's going to be different. Also how the partner hears information or needs to understand how they kind of process information is going to be important for how we write this too.
When and the word choice is really important. And I'm not talking about carte blanche. It's a carefully considered, like needs assessment. What do I really need in order to begin to take a step toward healing? What does our relationship really need? But we operate overtly from a trauma model. And for trauma, the word choice is probably the most important word in healing. And that's probably most obvious from the partner's perspective. But, you know, betrayal and the discovery of it is traumatic for the relationship, for the marriage. And so the way that we thought was really important is not just that it's the choice of one person. There's some sort of navigating needs and wants for the healing of both that ultimately results in the healing process beginning for the relationship itself.
Yeah, that's so good. Well, let's dive into some of the, because I'm sure there's couples that are listening right now that are going, okay, but what do you do? I mean, you talked about verbal, you talked about written. I heard you briefly say something about a polygraph, and then you talked about, you know, so what does kind of the overall process and some of the key elements of actually, if I could put it this way, doing a disclosure look like? And how do you, as therapists, and try to guide people through that? And within that, I know I'm peppering you with a lot of questions here. Within that, what is a typical, and I know it's couple to couple, it's different, but in terms of like a bell curve, what can couples expect regarding like timelines on certain elements of a disclosure?
It would help probably if you could give us an age group, because if you're talking about a disclosure,
let's talk our general, our bell curve of the audience that we are serving is going to be couples from early to mid 30s to mid to late 50s, kids, you know, just very family dynamic. So probably that mid 30s to mid 50s is a range of the couples that we are going to get that are dealing with a betrayal issue.
So I'm going to use the term uncomplicated, like an uncomplicated, just for the, Dan and I talk the actual sharing of information. We call that the right of truth. So for the right of truth itself, I would say anywhere like 2 hours would be for an uncomplicated type of disclosure. Add many more if we're having lots and lots of complications going on. Is that kind of the same or different for you, Dan?
Yeah, and let me just even that. So generally what happens in those the right of truth and that right, I agree that it's 2 hours, but it could be multiple depending on what the needs are, questions that the partner may have throughout. Generally what happens in that right is the disclosing person brings in a document, at least the way we're advocating for it, but they bring in a document that they've created that shares their history, which gives the information the partner is wanting to know without too much detail they don't want to know. And then essentially they read that document in that session. There's different ways you can do that. Sometimes it's supported by, we recommend it being supported by a specialist, a trained professional in this. I personally like to have two people there to support, one to support the partner, one to support the person disclosing, because a lot of times why this takes 2 hours, maybe more, we need to take breaks. There's just, it's a lot. Maybe the information we need to slow down and process, maybe we need to, so we kind of build in a way to support each person throughout. So having breaks, having, you know, individualized support is, I think, ideal, but not everybody can afford that and not everybody works that way. So that's completely fine too. I mean, Janice does, you do most of yours solo, correct?
Well, I do most of, if I do them in an intensive, I intensive. Do them solo. I kind of do all variations, but I will also say the advantages to doing it, like navigating as the couples therapist or the couples guide, which means you have to manage all parts, is a real practical one. And just a lot of those I've done disclosures with have been stalled for months. They're ready, but finding two guides who have mutual time in common can actually just really exacerbate the process. So I've done it in all ways. And the reality is it's just a helpful process. Well done. No matter how you navigate it, you're a step ahead. But I would also add, Dan, I think of this as like a choreography in three parts. You know, first part, the disclosing party is reading the document with the partner, with the exception of maybe some clarifying questions. I call those anchoring questions. What time are you talking about? Really doing mostly listening, maybe taking notes, maybe adding ideas about follow-up questions that she would like. Second part's halftime. It's this piece with, if I'm the partner's guide, where we might be processing emotions because there might be deep pain, deep grief, deep anger kind of happening or shock through that process. And so there's a piece of that that's processing any emotions that might need to come out and be dealt with sooner rather than later. But there's also, okay, let's take some time and let's take in what truth that you got. Did you get the answers to your questions? Oh, did 10 more pop up in its place? So it's reassessing what the needs are. And then the third part of the choreography is her being able to verbally ask those questions and get an answer. Sometimes the things that partners feel like they never got for, you know, despite the quest, to get truth, which is to, I got to ask a question and have him respectfully answer without minimizing or deflecting or any of those things. Or he did a great job with the written disclosure, but when I started to ask verbal questions, I saw shame, you know, kick in. And if that's the case, I might be by her side and saying, yeah, okay, did you see anything that suggests that he's put in motion any of this recovery stuff he's been working on? Did you see him recognizing he was in shame and trying to like manage that so that he could come back in connection with you? If he didn't, was he able to respond when Dan stepped in to kind of cue in for that? And I will encourage partners, like, that's part of the disclosure too. We get the opportunity, that happens. That's not a bad thing. We actually get to see him putting his recovery in motion. So it's a three-part process, and every piece of it has a really important role in the sort of overall quality.
Can I add to, and Jonathan, we can go there, spend more time, not. That's the actual rite of truth, kind of that big session. That's the disclosure. As you can tell, I mean, the person's coming in with a document prepared. So that, if we're doing that, that takes time. And for me, the pre-disclosure prep time is really important, especially if I'm working with a disclosing person, because I may be working through a dozen revisions of the document, actually. And it's usually what those revisions do. Let's say, you know, most of us, I mean, it's really difficult to write all this stuff out. It's these things that we wanted to keep secret. I didn't want to share this. I never wanted it to hurt myself or I hurt my partner. And here is a list of all the things that I'm most shameful about. And it's so difficult to write this thing. So of course it's difficult. And we usually try to find ways to minimize or distance a little bit from it. So, you know, my job as the kind of disclosing person's guide is to look for, are there subtle minimizations? It was only such and such, or I rarely did this, or other ways of when you were doing X, Y, and Z, I did this. So blame shifting. And my job is to help edit those things to say, really step in with full responsibility. Here are the things that I did, you know, without justification or minimization, blame shifting. So that's also part of the prep process for the disclosing person to see, you know, I noticed all these rationalizations that you did, and it's difficult to just take full accountability and stand there, you know, in strength with your partner as you share it. So that takes our rough. I mean, some people take months to do it. I think 6 to 8 weeks is anything less than six is feels pushed a little quick for me. More, sometimes people need more, but I think generally 6 to 8 weeks is our general guideline to prepare these. But you know, again, that's not a hard and fast time frame. But if someone's really wanting to do the work, I think you can do it in that time frame adequately.
Yeah. Now, if once that main chunk, like once the truth comes out, what is the intended hope, or what's the trajectory that you are hoping for that goes beyond that? Like, what are the things that, once all of that is out on the table, where do you go next in this overall disclosure process? Because I'm assuming that once that hits the betrayed partner, there's, you mentioned the third part, Janice, and the choreography of response, but that probably is more than just what's going to happen in that 2-hour period of time, right?
Yeah.
She's going to need to process her response. What does that look like?
Well, remember that the 7.7 earthquake for the Rite of Truth itself, that takes some time to recover from, you know, but there's one shoe doesn't fit, size doesn't fit all, even in the response to it. I've seen some couples where it was well done, and there's almost always with certain couples, you know, something that solidifies in the foundation. And some couples leave just feeling both pain and a lot of hope. For others, you know, let's say there was a lot of information that wasn't known. Some of it, the partner's worst fears were confirmed. Well, and for some of them, it's like there's going back into shock. Okay. Somebody's in shock, that's a different scenario. But there's usually, okay, now that I got the puzzle pieces to what was actually going on in his timeline, let me put it together. Let me see if I can get a holistic picture of that. And then almost always it goes to, and what was, now that I know what was happening, really happening in his life, what was going on for me? Now they start to put their own story, gets reconstructed, but this time based on truth. And so there's often a little bit of a solidification in their personal growth. And then which then is usually when possible, followed by a partner impact statement, which is can be a really powerful vehicle. For now I can change the shift from trying to figure out what was going on him. Now I can shift it to me. And I can begin to really take care of me. Often in that, it facilitates a process of personal grief. And in many cases, the start of some personal empowerment, okay? And the hope for partners who do that and share their impact statements, this is the way what you did, this is the way it hurt me in the short term, long term. You know, where I always hope that those go is that it facilitates the development, a phase of developing empathy, you know, for the disclosing party, and that it ultimately ends up in shared grief. Like, shared grief is really important to transitioning because it's something that they can do together.
Can I say too, around that time, a visual to think about is the sexual behaviors, the hidden sexual behaviors, and then the impact of those with lies and deceptions and all that, think of it like a cancerous tumor in the relationship for both parties and for the relationship. This rite of truth, our goal is to actually remove the cancerous tumor through this. But it's a major surgery. It's not like you're going to find relief right away. It's going to take some time, the recovery, the repair after that. So my thinking immediately after is rebuilding safety, rebuilding trust. Those are the things I want to focus on. So boundaries may be a part of that, really getting kind of just what do we need to establish a new sense of safety as we're rebuilding this relationship? We've got a new foundation we're starting with, but the house isn't rebuilt. We got to build that house and build it solid. So to me, that's the piece. And then for the disclosing person, kind of preparing for what Janice is talking about with the impact statement, the next phase disclosure for the disclosing person is, let's say I'm doing it, it's my story. Now I want to start thinking about what's her story. And so the job post-disclosure for the disclosing person is just what Janice is saying. Okay, now instead of in 2015, you know, this certain month, what was going on in your partner's life during that time? What are the significant events that she's going to key into that might be part of grief for her? You know, was there some significant event where you were engaged in acting out behaviors and you weren't present and you were doing those things, and now she's recognizing that and she's betrayed by that and really in pain. So it's starting to build that empathy of this is what was going on for her as we're preparing for the impact statement coming. Yeah. So that's, you know, start to do empathy development too.
And I would say that the level of like distress, like on the partner after the disclosure, doesn't just depend on what she learned or how difficult the rite of truth process was. It's also that preparation that she does before the disclosure, like her preparation that helps her be stronger in the aftermath. If somebody's going through a really, you had a choice to go through heart surgery, being in really pretty good shape, like, you know, versus being in really, I've let myself go. I haven't exercised in years. I don't eat healthily. All of those things. All in all, the person who's stronger going in is probably going to have a little bit of an easier, more rapid recovery. So it's really, you see the gains of all that prep work for the partner. You really see it after the disclosure.
Mm-hmm. So I've got one other major question as we kind of start to land the plane here. And that is, what are the primary obstacles for couples either doing a disclosure or once they get into disclosure, where do they get stuck? What are some of the maybe sticking points where you see couples, either they can't go forward or they're struggling to take the next steps?
Shall we popcorn this, Dan?
Sure, you're sure.
I'll start it out with when there were lies. When they didn't really come clean in the disclosure with that. And then maybe I'll also throw in, sometimes when disclosures are done really early, partners do get important information, but they're not ready to accept it. There's a difference between knowing the truth and being able to accept, this is the reality of it, which is kind of like getting stuck in being able to grieve. Okay, your turn, Dan.
Yeah, two things I'm thinking of the disclosing person. First, and I mentioned it before, we have had cases the partners wanting disclosure, or we'll even not even touch polygraph today, but let's just say throw a polygraph out there. But the disclosing person's refusing. So I think that's a first. It's kind of a no. It's hard to move forward through that if the partner's saying, I need to understand what happened, what's the extent of this, and the disclosing person says, I'm not willing to do that. So to me, that's a huge place where couples get stalled. And it's hard to recover from that. That's one. The other thing is, this is my real plea to anyone brave enough to do disclosure. I love working with people doing this because it's so brave and so important. And it's so foundational for healing a relationship. But I find, you know, most of the guys I work with, they think disclosure is the finish line as opposed to the starting line. So it's a huge starting line. It gets us to a good foundation. But I think a big barrier I see a lot is if someone isn't adequately prepared, that disclosure is a good starting point to heal the relationship. It's not the end goal. And we're going to kind of get back to the way things were afterwards.
Yeah.
It doesn't work like that.
And
how important is it? I was going to ask like a follow-up question on that. How important is it then for couples as they're coming through, especially couples that are moving towards greater health post-disclosure, how important is it for them to realize that they have, the disclosure is actually laying a foundation for a rhythm of truthfulness in their relationship?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a model.
Why is that so critical? Because I mean, for the guys that think it's a finish line, you know,
some think, yeah, you're right. I think some, it's like the idea of recovery, you know, somehow the recovery versus recovered. You know, to me, I like the idea of recovery, meaning I think of it as a process of sanctification. I'm never done. I'm never perfect. So I'm always going to be growing, always going to be improving. So hopefully it does lay a foundation. But I think some guys I've worked with, I don't know about you, Janice, but they have this a distorted thinking, like if I can just give her what she wants, she'll get off my back, she'll kind of calm down, and then I can sort of get back to the way things were before. Yeah. That's the distortion, which doesn't work like that after betrayal. It just doesn't. It just doesn't work after discovery. And I think that's the thinking I see, and I have to try and help them understand that's not how this works.
Yeah, it's not getting back to where we were, because where you were was actually not built on a solid foundation, like with that. And then I would say, like, partners sometimes expect, because there was empathy during the disclosure, during the exchange, that therefore he's got empathy. And now he's going to be comfortable with all this emotional stuff, not recognizing that that's the starting. It's really more of a starting place. And that's something that has to actually grow. And there's a lot of work afterward for that.
Mm-hmm. Well, this has been a great conversation. I want to give each of you an opportunity to just share maybe a word of just hope or encouragement to any couples out there that are listening right now that are going, we're kind of in the thick of it. We have, you know, especially for that betrayed partner that's going, I just have a sense I don't know everything. I'm still in that limbo of unknowing. Just what word of encouragement would you give those couples to just kind of take the next step toward disclosure? And then if you could share again how folks could get access to the resources that you all have created.
You want to start, Jen? Sure, I'll start.
I want you to start, sir.
Oh, you want me to start? So this is my encouragement for the person considering disclosing this information. I recognize that most people I've worked with have learned, you know, to hide, to keep these things secret, to protect themselves. And in their minds, this idea that if I share all this stuff, it's going to devastate myself. It's going to kill our relationship. It's going to, you know, disclosure is actually the most harmful thing to do. They tend to learn. What I want to say, we are only as sick as our secrets. That's a phrase. And I really believe that. I do think it's not in secrecy that we preserve relationships. It's actually having authentic brokenness, for lack of better words, right? Like this, being able to be a whole human being, and that's not perfect. And yes, it is painful to hear these things for your partner, but you give your partner so much by giving these choices, by giving your partner the information that they desperately need to heal. You give them and your relationship this incredible gift of healing, and it builds. And honestly, we couldn't do this work. If this was just hopeless and everything crumbled after disclosure, we wouldn't have created a model. It would be super depressing. So we see this as a beautiful, you know, sacred healing process that couples can go through to rebuild and heal and restore their relationships. And it can be so much more beautiful through this, because it's real, it's authentic. There's no secrets anymore.
Yeah. And maybe what part of what Dan and I learned in creating these resources is that our words aren't as important as the words of other couples who've gone through it. And so I'll speak for them through like some of the research that we did. And we've done research on the outcome of disclosures, and it is painful. They're difficult things, but the benefits outweigh the gain, you know, the harms to that. Like, I think it was something upwards of 93% who've gone through that process and acknowledge, yes, it was really tough. Also say that the benefits outweighed any of the pain or harms from doing that. And so again, I kind of think of that medical model. Heart surgery really hurts. It's dangerous. It's slippery. It's scary. But the gift that you get from doing it is like really living.
Yeah. And so give the website again on where people can get the you know, your information and then also the workbooks for sure.
Well, I'll start with just saying the easiest way to get the workbooks is to go to Amazon. Yeah. There's a one volume kind of comprehensive for the addicts. And they're three separate volumes. So it's not quite as overwhelming. They're three separate volumes for the partners. And then Dan, you want to do the.
Yeah. And the title is Full Disclosure, How to Share the Truth After Sexual Behavior for the Disclosing Person, which is a blue, we call it the big blue book. And there's a green books that are the Partner Companions volume 1, 2, yeah. and 3.
Full Disclosure, Seeking Truth.
Seeking Truth. What we have, what we're trying to build too on the Kintsugi Recovery Partners.com website, we're trying to also build a community of people who, because disclosures can go really poorly of people that aren't well trained. So we've been training professionals where, you know, that comes, we've been training pastors and clergy, we've been training coaches, we've been training therapists. So we want to have a model that people can access, and also a resource that you know, consumers out there can see, wait, who is using this? Who's using kind of this model? So there's a disclosure guide resource there too for people to find.
That's, you know, great. Well, again, Dan and Janice, I want to thank you both for doing the work you're doing and being on here today to share with couples a very hopeful message around disclosure. Like you guys both said, you know, it's not an easy or necessarily a comfortable process, but you wouldn't be doing it if there wasn't a hopeful return on that investment. So thank you for being with us today.
Thanks, Jonathan. Thanks for what you do. Yeah.
Well, listeners and viewers, we are going to put a lot of stuff in the show notes around what you just heard today from Dan and Janice. And I really want to encourage you couples that are feeling like you're just either stuck or you just need to take that next step towards really getting to the truth and experiencing the hope that can come from that. Please, you know, reach out to us. We want to help you take your next best step, and also check out all the resources that we're going to put in the show notes. And we look forward to seeing you back here again next time on the Pure Sex Radio program. Take care.
Pure Sex Radio is paid for by Be Broken Ministries. Visit us online at puresexradio.com.